You're listening to Good Timing. I'm your host, Isabel Hagen. Hey there, we're doing the monologue. I was not going to do the monologue, but then my guest today, as you will hear, convinced me to do it. So here it is, the monologue. I've been very depressed the last few days, partly the holidays, and also I'm dealing with some stuff in my personal life, which I can't talk about because it's personal, but usually I'm more anxious than depressed, so this is a nice change of pace, you know? It's like, I feel like depression is like the sexier of the two, you know? Depression, at least I can be like, like, I'm depressed. I'm going to go for a thoughtful walk and look off into the distance. Whereas anxiety, you're just like annoying everybody, you know, like just nervous. And anyway, I don't know. They're both bad. I don't mean to glorify anything. But today's episode put me in a much better mood. I talked to one of my favorite stand-ups and favorite people, Sean Donnelly. Sean is a hilarious guy you've seen on Conan and Comedy Central and Colbert and everywhere else. He hosts Celebrate Sirius on Sirius XM, and he's the co-host of the DYM podcast, where he and another comic, Andy Fiore, talk about movies. Definitely check that stuff out. Also follow him on Instagram and Twitter at Shawnee Time. I don't know how he pronounces it, but it's spelled S-E-A-N-Y-T-I-M-E. And as always, please tell a friend about this podcast if you're enjoying, and go into Apple Pods if you haven't already and hit that 5-star button, give it a review, hit subscribe, and send me some positive vibes. I don't know, just think good podcast thoughts. That would help. Okay, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Sean Donnelly. Like a typical intro for you, and then we can start it.
Whatever you want to do. Yeah.
All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Good Timing. Today's guest is a very funny stand-up comedian. You've seen him on Colbert. You've seen him on Conan. You've seen him everywhere. He's one of my favorites. Please welcome to the show, Sean Donnelly. Hi, Sean.
Hello there. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for doing it. I just started doing these intro now. I used to like record like a monologue.
Yeah.
But I think it's more fun to just intro the person and then have them right here. What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. It cuts down on the awkward amount of time that I'm just here not doing anything.
Right. Well, no, I would do that like separately.
Oh, separately the monologue. Yeah.
But like, I don't know, how many times can someone listen to me just fucking pontificate about like my day, like nothing's happening.
A bazillion times, because that's what it is. That's what comedy is right now. Like, it's just, we want to hear what's going on with your day, because that's becoming what comedy is. Like, that's like there's no live shows going on. So where else are you going to have that outlet?
Well, that's true. All right. Well, you've convinced me otherwise.
Yes.
This will be the last intro I ever do. I'm very easily swayed. You know?
You know what? If you want me to be brutally honest, I'll say you should do the intro, the monologues, whatever you want to do, because you need to have time for the podcast to be about you and just your thoughts.
Right. Right.
And then go into the interview. Like I feel like we should be more selfish with these things. It's like, it's supposed to promote you more than anything, you know?
Right, right. Because like, no one's right now at this stage, like no one's like, oh, like I want to hear Isabel talk to this person. They're just sort of like, who's this girl, you know?
Yeah, that's what you think though. But there's definitely people who are like the people who are tuning in are the ones who are like, oh, I like this girl a lot and she's talking. I'll take her word for it and hear this interview with this comic. And then I like to hear her thoughts on stuff. Like, it's like, guarantee that's why you're good at comedy. That's why, because I think that's a good comic's mentality, is like, who wants to hear what I have to think about this shit? Like, that's every comic I've ever looked up to or respected has had that same thing. Like, no comic I've ever liked has walked off stage and go, I just killed. Like, I've never liked anybody who's ever said that in their lives.
Right. No, you gotta like hate yourself.
Yes.
To be good. Maybe. I mean, I'm trying not to hate myself more, but
it's not hate yourself. It's just keep yourself. I think you're right. I don't think we should hate ourselves per se, but I think it should be a thing where you're always striving to, like, you're not just status quo with anything. You're not just okay with, like, you're not just like, especially when it comes to stand up. I've always been that way where it's like, even if it's like, even if you know you killed on the set and you're like, that was a great set, you're still going to be like, well, I said this one word weird. Like, it's just a matter of like fine tuning things and not being satisfied with what you're doing. Cause I think that makes you stagnant in this and it makes you less funny.
Totally. And like, you just want to always be like having that perfectionist mentality and using it to get better.
Yeah.
While not like using the perfectionism to like hold you back. Like, I think some people are such perfectionists, they never even do anything.
Right.
It's like this balance of like, all right, fuck it, I'm going to do it. And then afterwards being like, all right, how could I get better?
Right. You're already doing it. And that's the one thing that we have as far as stand-up goes. Like, there's so much bullshit to deal with in stand-up. The one thing you have is that you did it. You were doing it. You're doing something that 90% of the population won't do.
Right. And sorry. Have you always had... Oh, no. You, please.
No. I was just going to say, like, that's the one, especially when it goes well. So like the one saving grace I have, or the one defense that I have, if somebody ever says anything passive aggressive or somebody says something regarding stand up about them, about, oh, I could do this, I could do that, or some weird audience interaction after the show or something, the one thing I have and I've conveyed to people is, you won't do this. You won't do it. Like, you haven't, right? And you won't. That's the difference. Because like, people like to talk about, like, you know, I talk about ego and people like to go, because especially when it comes to like people on dates, or it comes to people who are already used to doing well in their lives, it's usually people like who have a bunch of money already, and they'll go, and it's one of those things where they'll go to shows and they can't, it's mostly with dudes, they can't deal with the idea that, oh my god, this guy's stealing my thunder. Like, it's one of those kind of things where it's like, oh my god, this guy or girl or whatever, it's like they're taking the, I guess, not, I don't want to call it the alpha role, but like taking the, like, they advantage them, like they're winning in this situation. Like, they're making my date laugh, or they're making my friends laugh, or whatever it is.
Right.
And I don't know if that's too, like, you know, inside baseball, but I'm just saying, like, I just think that, that's why a lot of those people at the end, if they go up to the comic and they say something weird, because they're like, I need that power back. I need now we're on even footing, and I'm going to make you feel like shit, even if I don't realize I'm doing it.
Right. But it's so weird though, because that happens to comedians. Like, that's happened to me too, maybe for other reasons, because I'm a woman or whatever. Someone feels the need to say something
say
and to
weird
assert
shit
themselves.
To women. To
yeah, yeah. Like,
people.
Hey, you actually made me laugh. I'm like, all right, cool. Thank you. And like, I hate that it actually makes me feel good when people say that sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I'm a funny woman. Like, but
yeah.
That's
and I'll tell you, I used to do the same thing you did when people said even weird stuff to me as a dude, where they'd be like, oh yeah, that was pretty good. Or, oh, it was okay. You made me laugh a couple times, whatever it is. And I got to a point with it. And this is, how long have you been doing it for?
Like 5.5 years.
Okay. Yeah. So I was at your stage, I'm 15 years in or whatever. And I got to a point where I'm like, I'm not letting those people get away with that ever again. Like, ever again. Right. If you make me feel awkward now, and I've been doing this long enough, I've earned my stripes enough to make you feel awkward right back. Right back. But like, even if it's just a matter of they say that to you, hey, you were funny for a girl. You were funny for a girl. Just to go, what do you mean? What do you mean by that? What do you mean? And then they go, you know what I mean? Like, girls aren't usually funny, but what girls aren't funny? You don't, you know, you never seen a funny girl before? What do you mean? Like, even if you just push them to the point of being like, even if it never even gets resolved and they just feel awkward and they walk away, I've won in that situation. I would think that of that as a win, because fuck them.
Yeah, no, fuck them. And like, that's such a, I should do that. But then I also just want people to like me so much that
same
I don't
here.
Want them, because I know they're going to be like, what a cunt. Like, she like,
yeah.
She got all defensive. And, but I mean, whatever.
I'm the same way. But in normal life, I will do that because I want people to like me. But when it comes to comedy, and I know I'll never see this person again, I've gotten enough. I think age does it. And I think also having enough, comedy makes you confident and a wreck at the same time. And like it makes you anxiety ridden and also confident at the same time. And it goes back and forth. So comedy has given me a lot of confidence, but it's also made me crazy at times and made me, you know, be totally just like you were saying, just want to be liked constantly or whatever it is. But in certain scenarios, especially after you do well, if I do well, you're invincible for like 20 minutes and you're like,
20 minutes. You said that with such joy. 20 whole minutes.
I thought that was a lot of time. See, that's what I'm talking about. I still have that anxiety. I still have that feeling of you know, I'm not of a lack of confidence or whatever you want to call it, but in certain moments of my life, and when it's come to certain moments in comedy, I'm like, oh, I can exert this for, or even at least fake it for right now, because you just watched me do well on stage and you can't do that and you won't do that. And I get very adamant and I get very into doing that if the opportunity arises, because I'm like, because the proper thing for you to do is either not say anything to me after the show if you didn't like it, or you come up and you go, great show, see ya. And you go, thanks so much.
Right. And I'm sure, like, I mean, I never thought about it in the way you presented it with, like, oh, a lot of people at comedy shows are like on dates and like seeing their date like laugh at another guy. I've never, I guess because I'm not in your position, I'm not, maybe a woman would be annoyed if her guy was laughing at me. I don't know. But it's like a masculinity thing, I think.
I think it's a masculinity thing. I think it's mostly guys that think that way. It's the same guys who say you're funny for a girl. Like, it's like that same bullshit stance that makes no sense. I've had guys multiple times, I don't know if you've had this happen, I've had guys try to tip me after the show. You ever had that happen?
No.
Yeah, I've had guys try to tip me. No, I won't take it. A guy handed me $100 and I said no.
Oh wow.
Because
why? Because it feels insulting, or
it's insulting, and I know why he's doing it. And it's mostly right. Guys walking up to you with their girl, with their woman, with their wife, with their partner,
right,
and saying, that was great. And even if they're doing it, they're not being jerks about it, they're coming up all friendly-like. But no, once again, the power is not going to transfer here. This is all right. I have. All I have right now is that I made your wife laugh. And nothing's going to happen. I'm not going to steal your wife from you. It's not going to happen. But these guys, they're so vulnerable and they're so insecure that they're like, I need, especially, like I said, especially guys who have a bunch of money. They have to go, well, this is how I rectify this situation. Right. And I won't do it. I've been offered, that most was 100, but even 100, I need $100. I just won't. Like, there's certain things. I don't know if you've had this yet. Is there certain things you wouldn't do in comedy? That's one of them. I won't let you tip me. And then I won't do warm up ever again in my life. So there's certain things that I've learned over time that I will not let happen to me in this.
Like warm up for a late TV night show or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did you work as a warm up comic for a while?
I worked on random. I tried out for a couple shows. I worked on a couple of shows for a few episodes. They were, and I almost got a couple of like steady gigs doing it. But what I realized, it's like one of the most demeaning things in comedy. Like I was a doorman for 2 years in a rich building on 89th Street. And warm up is a way more demeaning job than doorman.
Yeah, it's a different skill. I mean, it's all crowd work, right? And it's also not, like,
it is, but it shouldn't be. If I ever did it again, which I wouldn't, I would do why those. See, what happens is this: you would just become the guy that people make fun of in warm up, but you don't realize they're doing it because out of necessity. It's not stand up,
right?
So they're doing it because if I did it, I'd be like, give me a t-shirt gun. We're doing a dance contest. I'm going to bring inflatable things to chuck into the crowd. Like, right. And I would have no qualms about it. Like if they were like, hey, we'll give you $5,000 a week to do one, you know, something insane where I'm like, all right, I can't turn this down. I would show up with every different game, every different thing, because that's what it should be. Because the way I did it was, I'm going to do my material and I'm going to do crowd work, but it goes on for a while. So after a while, you're just talking to the same people over and over again. And it's not, and they're also the worst. They're not there for stand-up comedy. They're there to see this famous person host the show. So the guys who have sweet gigs doing it are like the ones who do like the late night ones where they go out for 10 minutes and they kind of have to just stick around if there's any problems, and then they're out of there. That's stand up. And I did one gig I did was for W. Kamau Bell Show, and that was stand up. It was like a comedy audience and they were great. But I got let go. I don't know why. I'm not diverse enough. I don't know why I was even asked to do it. I got there and I was like, I tell these people the story. I don't know if I ever told on a podcast, but that show was kind of bad. It was like a bad show. Like I can say that now. It's a shit. I used to feel bad about saying stuff like that. It was a bad show. It wasn't funny. And one of the things they would do is, I think the reason why it was bad, that show, was because they would put message before comedy. Like they were trying to put out a message of you know, diverse message, which was great. But that was being sacrificed for jokes. And mm-hmm. I remember there was one time they had me throw to a sketch. They were like, okay, you're going to throw to a video of a sketch and then go back to the warm-up. We just want to get the people laughing at the sketch when we air it. I guess that's why they did it. So they play the sketch. And the point of the sketch was like, white guys are evil, huh? Like, and it was like, and there was no jokes. It was just like, look how evil this white guy is. So I'm standing there as a 40-something or, you know, 30, late 30s white guy watching this going, how do I go back to performing in front of you? It was that bad. So I stopped, the video stops. It goes back to me and I go, well, I feel like an asshole like that. Right. And they didn't laugh at the sketch. They laughed at that because they were like, yeah, what was that? And the whole audience was diverse. It was all different types of people, white, black, green, yellow, everything. So
yeah,
when you do that, you risk losing the comedy. And I think that's what happened.
Yeah, there's something about like whenever your like art form is sort of like taken and used for something else than what it actually is, it feels really degrading. Like when I play viola like in the background at a party and like no one's really listening,
yeah,
like it's fine, but like it just does feel like really awful in the moment. Like I'm getting paid, so I'll do it
right
for now.
Right.
But I think it's the same thing as like when you're doing your jokes, like out of in the wrong context, or like you're really just there for like this other purpose other than just like them laughing at, I don't know.
Yes.
It's like butchering your craft in a way.
Absolutely. It's definitely, it's demeaning it is what it's doing. And that's what warm-up does.
But like as a doorman, like you're literally there to open the door.
You
didn't practice being a doorman for years and years. And then it's like this, that's the thing. It's like something you've worked on so hard. Like I'd almost rather just be like the caterer at the wedding, like the waiter.
Yeah.
Because those people are just doing a job that they didn't. Like, it's just what it is.
Yeah. But you're there. You're like, hey, this is my life's work that I'm really into. And you guys are just eating pigs in a blanket while you're just not even paying attention.
Right. Yeah. It's just, it's awful. But I mean, it's not that bad. But
right. Right. But is it also, I wonder if it's, does the whole idea, do you ever, while you're there, is it like this weird stage thing that you go through where you just, is there acceptance at any point during the night where you're just like, all right, this is the gig and I'm just here and this is what it is.
Yeah. And especially if I'm in like a quartet with my friends, like we can kind of like just fuck around and like have fun with each other. It really just like depends who you're playing with, what the music is, how comfortable are we all. So there's like a spectrum of that as well within the shitty situation.
It's so interesting to me that you do stand up. It's so funny to me when I see people that are like, do these amazing real life things. And then they go to the dregs of just the underbelly of the entertainment world and go to stand up. And like Matteo Lane. Matteo Lane is an operatic singer. Matteo Lane is an amazing illustrator and he's a stand up. I'm like, what are you doing?
But that's real life too. Going to like a back room of a bar and doing that. I mean, that's, arguably like more real in a way.
No, it is. But I'm just saying like that's high class to me being from Long Island and being like just way more blue collar than I realize is like, I'm like, oh, you play the viola. That's pretty great. Like, it's just like this idiot's outlook on like your instrument. Like, oh my God, this fancy lady's going to start doing stand up like that.
It's so funny. I really like, I don't feel comfortable in being seen as this like fancy person, you know? And I used to like watch stand up and just be like, oh, that seems like so much nicer. Like you just go up on stage with a hoodie and like be real rather than this whole like charade of, I don't know.
Yeah.
But did you ever picture yourself doing anything else besides stand up in a performance aspect?
No.
You were like a theater kid or?
I was in a couple of plays when I was in like eighth grade. I was like, I played a newsboy in Gypsy when I was in eighth grade at the high school. And then I was in like one other thing. My thing was movies. So I was like, I'm going to be a film director. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted for as long as I can remember. But then I went to Hunter and I was going to minor in film at Hunter. And when I got there, I don't know if I just tell myself this or if it really was what happened. I think it really is what happened. The people turned me off so much. I just was like, I can't take being in these classes. I can't do it. I can't be around these people.
Just the like pretentious kind of
film people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I regret doing it, but I'm also like, I probably made the right choice.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like you don't have to, maybe this is naive, but it doesn't seem like you have to take a class to get into that stuff. Sort of the same with like stand up. Like you can kind of like just start making things and learn as you go. And
I think now is way easier to do that back then when I went to college. I'm like I said, I'm a very old man. So I think back when I was there, like film was film. Like people were like, you had to learn how to use a film camera and like a film, like they were like very more traditionalist with it. Now, yeah, you're right. You're grabbing your iPhone and you're making little films and it's digital and people learn it on the fly. But I'm still into movies. I should get into more of the, I always wanted to, and then I don't pull the trigger because I'm like, what if it stinks? Like I have that doubt in my brain about like, I should make some stuff, but maybe it'll, you know, maybe not be great, you know?
Yeah. Cause it's like expensive to do that. And you just, I made like a tiny little web series thing.
Yeah. I saw one of them. It was great.
Oh, thanks. But like, I had no idea what I was doing. And it really did feel like, all right, well, I'm just going to try this and, we'll see. And even now, like having done that one thing, like I wrote a short and I'm like, I don't know if I want to spend a few thousand dollars to make this thing that might suck now. Like,
yeah.
It's just hard.
But the sketch didn't suck. It was really funny. I thought.
Oh, thank you. I think
you need that to hear that. But I would have been, and I could have just been like, I didn't see it. And then if I didn't like it, you know, like, I didn't see it.
Right, right.
But I really did.
Right, right. Oh, well, that means a lot. Thanks, Sean. okay. So when did you start doing stand up? How old were you?
I started later than most people. I started when I was 28.
Isn't that funny that that's like considered like
for stand up? Yeah. You know why? Because I think most people get turned onto it in their college town. Right, or at their college talent show, and then they just keep going with it. So they're starting when they're like 20, 19, 21, like that kind of. I wanted to for the longest time. I was a huge stand-up fan. I was dying to do it, dying to do it. I just never had the guts to do it. And the real reason I did it, and I've told people this before, and I always feel so – it feels so – unromantic to say this, but the real reason I did it is because this is how much I wanted to do stand up. I was helping out with shows. I was like handing off flyers for shows, but not going up. So you know how like stand ups bark for shows?
Yeah.
Like I was barking and then I would just like watch the show and go home. Like it was like that. That's how much I wanted to, I didn't have enough courage to do it. And Joe DeVito, who is an amazing comedian and a super funny guy and a friend of mine, it was his show I was helping out with. And he goes, you know what? Around the corner from here, there's an open mic. I really think you should go check it out and see what you think. And I went and it was so bad that it emboldened me to go, I can do that. I can 100%. I can be that bad. I can be that bad. And I went back like a week later and I had a shot and a beer and I went up.
Isn't that funny? Like stand-up is both like the scariest thing to picture yourself doing in a way, but then also if you actually go to an open mic, it's so bad that like you're gonna be fine going up. Like that's exactly what happened to me too. I was so nervous, like nauseous. I was like forcing myself to walk to this open mic. Like I was literally like muttering, like, I don't want to do this, but I like knew I had to. And then I got there and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. It wasn't like some triumphant moment where I took the stage.
And being on the stage is still hard at first. Like even just being on the stage, even in that scenario, but the getting up there makes it way easier once you see, cause it's a bunch of Looney Tune people or it's bunch of people who are like, there's, it's just a lot of green people, like nobody's good there usually, like unless it's like some that ends up happening at some point, but first couple of years nobody's good.
Yeah, but going back to it actually being hard when you take the stage, I do say this to people, like when people are being kind of dicks, like I feel like I could do that, like I could do stand up, and you want to be like, fuck you, you definitely could not. Like instead, because it is so hard, I'm always like, try it.
Yeah, that's what I say.
You should definitely try it. Like, cause you know, if they are good, then great. I'm glad they tried it. But it most likely they're gonna be like, oh.
You're right. I never thought of it this way, but I everybody who brings that up, I do the same thing. I go, what I tell everybody is try it once.
Yeah.
And this way you can say you did it. And if you don't like it, you don't go, keep going. If you do, you continue. And usually that's met with no. And that actually what I just realized now, that's a good conversation stopper, because it's like, instead of them being like, yeah, I was toying with the idea. And then it's like, well, do it. You can easily do it. I can give you 500 places that you can do it in the next week.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever had like your mom, like, have so, like a friend's kid like get in touch with you, like, yes. Oh, like I'm interested in comedy, like my mom knows your mom, like what do you do, how do you start? I've even like I've offered to go to open mics with people, never happens. Like I'm like, oh yeah, totally, like there's this open mic, we can, I'll go with you, like let's do it. I'm it's like the more helpful you are and like actually encouraging them to do the work, they're just like, oh no, sorry, I thought you were gonna just like snap your fingers and make me a comedian somehow. Yeah.
And that should illustrate how, like I said before, there's only a small percentage of the population that does this for real.
Right.
But I've had that happen too. I had a guy who was from my town and I reached out because he was only doing bringer shows. And he like had my town paper write an article about him doing stand up. And I go, he's not doing it. He's not. So I wrote to him. I said, listen, I go, don't just do bringers. You have to do open mics. And he goes, I've done a couple of open mics. I go, listen, I run one. This is back when I ran an open mic. I run one. It's fun. I'll put you wherever you want in the lineup. Come on down and do it. So he came down. Right. I put him up like fourth, which is like perfect. And he bombed and he never came back and he just kept doing bringer shows and then he stopped and then, you know, whatever.
And then if someone does take your advice and they happen to be good, then it's like it was meant to be. Like occasionally there could be someone who's like, okay, I will go to an open mic. Like I reached out to a comedian when I was interested in doing stand-up and they were like, just get up as much as possible. That's all I can say. They were like kind of cold and I was like, okay.
Who was it? Somebody well-known?
Yeah, I'm not going to say. It's too embarrassing. You know when you're like starting out and you're kind of like weirdly cocky, you're just like, I'm going to reach out to this person. It's like it was like a friend of a friend. Like I had a connection to them. I'll tell you off the podcast.
Okay.
it's humiliating. But so when you said when you first like got up there on stage, it was still hard. Do you struggle with performance anxiety now or is that like kind of gone? Do you get like excited or...
There's a Patrice O'Neill thing that I always say whenever this comes up, which what he said is you should always have not anxiety about going on. You should never be not nervous where you're going to run off. It's different where it's not like you're going to run off the stage crying or something, but you should always be either excited or have a little bit of butterflies before you go up. Cause that means you care about how it's going to go. So in the traditional sense of performance anxiety, I don't get that. But what I do get is because I have that insecurity of me being good at this. I've been doing this a while, and you want to ask me if I'm good at this, I'm in my opinion, I'm not. And so what happens, what that manifests itself as is now when I do shows is that if somebody goes up before me and they're doing pretty well, I'm like, oh, I'm going to bomb after this person. It's going to be horrible. Especially when it's like a tougher show and, you know, and right now there's like barely any shows going on, but I mean, like in general, and then what ends up happening? So you're super uncomfortable before I go up. So that's the anxiety part. And then once I get up there, it's like that's where I'm comfortable. And then I'm like, and then I realize, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing and I'm good at this and I can continue. And then you get that emboldens you as well, where you're going, oh my, all those years of me being on a stage and not caring now kick in because I'm fine with what's going on in this scenario.
And yeah, you're right. There's like a difference between like just the excited energy that you said Patrice was talking about and then actually like shaking anxiety, you're gonna like poop your pants, like I can't do this. And with stand-up, I like, for me it's about like fearing the anxiety because I know that like a little shakiness isn't gonna mess me up when I'm talking.
Yes.
So I don't get nervous about getting nervous, whereas like when I play viola, I know that if I'm even a little nervous, I'm going to fuck up.
Oh really?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm like, oh, I can't get nervous at all, and then it like doubles down, so it's kind of a nightmare. But,
oh wow, okay. But with stand-up you don't have that.
Yeah, and actually this is different from you, but when I see someone like killing before me, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna probably be fine, just because I know it's kind of like also crowd dependent. I'm like, okay, as long as I don't like suck, I'll probably be fine. Like they're having a good time. They're not gonna be like,
I think of it, I have that. You started in the city, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of it when I started in New York because I was from here, and I think of it like back in the day, this is a straight fight competition and I have to do, I don't just have to do good. I have to do better than the person that went on before me. And the, the anxiety that comes, and it's also, so, it's so irrational because it's, especially when it's like a showcase show or it's like, you know, it's like there's five comics on the show. It come, it also from the, when starting headlining, it does it too. Cause you're like, when it becomes the job and I'm like, oh, like, I don't want to get buried by the person before me. So and I have to do the job and I'm getting paid for this. So I have that worry too, where it's like, oh, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
But there's like, there's both of those aspects come into it. So it's like the, my old way of thinking, which is how we used to be. I don't think like your class of like your high school class of comics is like this as much, but the way we used to be was like, this person killed on this show was like a notable event and would get around the comedy scene. I don't think that happens anymore. I think nobody cares how people do on stage. We used to get, I think people care. I think personally they care and people will in the moment care. But like if you did well on a bar show, like back when I started and I was doing mics and bar shows, like you would get a better bar show because you did well on the one bar, like that kind of thing.
I mean, I think that still happens. Still happens?
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
I also wonder if they're just like more and more comedians doing it now. Like my generation might be like bigger than your generation just because more and more people are like interested in comedy and there's just more and more opportunities, weirdly, like shitty opportunities, but like just places to do it. So it's all kind of just like, I feel like this is just what's happening in the world with like social media and like so many TV shows and everything's just like so much more like diced up and like niche and everyone's in their own world and just no one even like talks anymore. I don't know.
Yeah,
like, no,
that's, I think you're absolutely right. I think that, yeah, makes, I guess that makes sense.
That's what you were saying.
Yeah.
But I think it's also not just because of our like personality differences, but just because there's just so fucking many of us. It's like, I can't keep track of like who killed at Littlefield or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
you're right. I forget how much smaller the scene was in New York before I went. I mean, when I, early on me starting.
Right.
I'll tell you this really quickly. As far as the best way to describe my mindset before I do comedy is I have a story. I think I've said it on a podcast before, but I'll say it again. All right. So at the Comedy Cellar, I think you did one. I was doing those shows at Fat Black Pussycat. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did one of mine, right?
No, I think we were both doing it with Joe List.
Okay. Like, that's what it was. You might
have. Yeah. We were both.
So you have these like little mini headlining shows there, whatever it is. Right. So mine was at like 9 PM and Colin Quinn would do a thing where he would run his stage show at like 7 at the Fat Black Pussycat. So one time I'm there and it's me and Colin Quinn and Liz who manages the Cellar and another comic. I forget. It might've even been you. It might've been when I actually, no, it wasn't. It wasn't.
Okay.
But we're there, and then Colin asks me, because he saw a bunch of comics around, so he goes, Sean, how many people do you have opening for you on your show? And I said, 4. and he goes, 4? 4? 4? And I go, yeah. And then he says, I know why that is. And then Liz said, why? Because he wants a longer show or something. And he goes, no. Because he's Irish and he's thinking, how dare I have them come just see me? And Isabel, that is the, you ever have something like secret in your brain that you don't even almost know is there? And then somebody calls it out and your stomach drops and you want to puke because you're like, holy shit, I didn't think anybody would figure that out. That was moment my stomach dropped because he was 100% right. That's that's the perfect way to put it.
So you felt better about having an audience come see you if they were also seeing like a whole lineup of comedians.
Because my thought process is my part is shitty. So at least they'll have these good comics they can come see. And that's why I filled up the lineup. And that's that's not the only reason I wanted to have my friends open up and whatever. And it is like an hour and a half show. So I could put people up and I was only whatever the other logistical reasons. But the reason that I was never going to tell anybody in a million years was that I was thinking, how dare I have them come just see me? He worded it perfectly. He goes, how dare I have them come just see me? Yeah.
Is he Irish too?
Yes. Oh, he's very Irish. He's more Irish than I am.
So that's an Irish thing?
It's an Irish thing, yeah. Irish-American thing. So
I'm like so not Irish. Sorry, that's a weird thing to say, but I have no Irish in me because I guess people might think because I'm like super white that maybe I do.
And also your last name sounds Irish.
It's German.
German, okay.
Yeah, and then I'm half Jew. Who knew?
Whoa, there you go.
But wait, so what, how, why is that an Irish thing? Is it like a humility thing or like a self-hatred thing?
It's the simplest way to put it is somebody goes, how are you? I'm fine. What about you? How are you? Mm. What are you doing? Everything has to be off the self. Everything is, it's not about you. That's how you're raised. That's how you're raised. And that's how it comes out. So with the comedy version of that is, this audience does not want to come see me. They want to come see these people I have before me. Even though I know it's completely irrational and they're coming to see me, some of them. But I know that ideally, it's completely ridiculous, but it's still, you can't shake the feeling.
I mean, I think in a performance aspect, like, yeah, you definitely like would want to, the goal would be to be more proud. Like, of course they're coming to see me. Like I work hard and I'm proud of my craft. I feel like in like a human life way though, like that is a nice quality to like take it off yourself and like ask the other, be more concerned about the other person. And like, I don't know, that just seems like a good, like that's, there's nothing bad about that.
No. There's nothing bad about it. Well, no. There is not that. Well, the way you put it, there's nothing bad about it, but the actual intent in doing that, it's super insecure and it's not healthy. But the other part that I never said before is the point of doing those shows was so you could do new jokes. Mm-hmm. And I think it also gave me a pass so I can go, oh, I can do all these new jokes. And if they bomb, I have these four people that went up before me. So that's like, you know, so it doesn't have to be, because I have this thing where it's like when I go headline, and I don't have this anymore. But you want to do as well as possible, obviously. And you want to, like, I have this weird way of thinking where it's like every second of every joke, they should be laughing at something, even if it's something from the last thing and then it goes into the next, and you should be murdering every second of everything, which is really unrealistic. It doesn't happen all the time. But if you're not, I used to get really bad anxiety if that wasn't the case, to my standards in my head, where I'm like, this joke does this well, this joke does this well. I have no time for new stuff because that will, I'll lose them and then I won't be able to get them back. So me trying new stuff like was barely happening for a long time in comedy, because I was like, well, doing well is paramount over everything else. And then once I got okay with the idea of like, no, it's for me as well, and I want to try out, experiment with new whatever, I had way more fun than I was having.
Right. You're having more fun. The audience is actually in turn going to probably have more fun too. Cause you're like, and you're not like stiffly delivering all of your jokes. But also, as someone who hasn't been doing comedy as long and maybe who remembers like being just an audience member more recently, like I don't think I ever watched a comic and was like, well, that one joke didn't work. Like as long as like I laugh more than 50% of their set, I'm like, that was a success. Yeah. Like I'm not like, ooh, they really lost steam there for a second. And that's why it's so funny when comics are like so self-hating on stage, like, oh, you guys didn't like that one. And then the audience is just like, what? Like,
yeah,
we didn't realize we like had to just keep telling your jokes.
It's so good that you have that outlook, and just keep that outlook, because that's that, you're absolutely right. Because it took me years to shake that. It took me because of New York, because of how the open mics were here. And it was like, and also because of how the audiences can be tougher here, because they have so many choices on what to do in any given night. So the way I always thought it, like it took me years to realize that people were coming to shows thinking, I want to have a good time. The way I thought of it was, it's a street fight, and I'm going to win. I'm going to win you over. You're coming in with a deficit. You're coming in not liking me, and I'm going to make you like me. Yeah. So it's crazy. It's batshit crazy. It took me years to realize. You know what did it? I was in like, that isn't the first time it happened, but I was in Madison, Wisconsin, and then I recorded my album there. And then afterwards, they were like, thank you so much for coming here. And I was like, what? What are you? What are you thanking me for?
You forget that like you're performing a service that they're like paying you for, you know?
Yes.
It's so simple.
Yeah.
And people are coming to a show like, it's corny, you know, like, and I've had people say this to me with music too, like, no one wants you to fuck up. Like everyone's rooting for you. And you're like, yeah, whatever. But like, it's true. And like, we aren't rooting. We're mean and like competitive and doing the thing. So when we watch comedians or see musicians, we're like, ah, they suck. I'm better. But that's just like us.
Right.
And that's not most people who are just like trying to have a good time until you make their girlfriend laugh and then they want to fucking kick your
ass. They want to sit you up. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They're like, wait a minute. I didn't think this was going to be part of it.
Yeah. Like, why am I in a fist fight after this freaking show?
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just also, you were saying like the fighting thing, like, oh, like I have to be better than them. I think for me, I'm just like, as long as I'm, maybe this isn't good for my self-improvement, but as long as I like don't embarrass myself, like I'm still going to want to get better, but I'm not going to be like mortified, you know, as long as I like measure up to the other people on the show. And that's probably also from doing shows with people who've been like, if I'm on a show with you and Joe List, I'm not like, I better fucking murder more than those two. Like, you guys have been doing it so long. And like, you know, it's like, as long as I just hold my own, I'm happy.
I think it's a healthy way to think. I think you should, I don't know. I kind of see advantages in both sides of it, but to be honest, you probably like, you, I'm sure you like write way more newer jokes than I do. And you like, it's like one of those kind of things where it's like, if you're comparing the different, and don't get me wrong, I don't think that way anymore. I'm trying to get away from as much as I can. And if I have those fleeting thoughts, I kind of check them in my brain, but like, and it's made me have way more fun and probably be better by thinking that way. So the way you're thinking is a healthier way. It'll make you a better comic in the long run. Because you're thinking like, oh, I want to hold my own, but you're like, I want to like, it's like, I want to do well. Like, you're not saying I don't care if I do well. You're just saying, hey, if I can just measure up to, you know, these comics. And also, like I said, you're 5.5 years in. Like, it's one of those kind of things where it's like,
right.
So I think you should still want to strive to do really well, which you do. But I think the way that I was thinking about it was completely misguided and just awful and just weird. And it's my own insecurity.
Do you ever have this though, where you see someone killing before you and like you think they suck and you're like, well, if they're doing well, this is going to be so easy.
Oh,
like,
I'll tell you here a quick story.
Yeah.
I did this girl named Chewy, who is Asian American. Do you know Chewy?
I think
she's
I
a
do,
sweetheart yeah. of a person. She's awesome. Yeah, yeah. And she's, I don't even know if she does. I think she does still the stand up. She's, and she had a show at a place called KGB Bar, which is next to New York Comedy Club's, the East Village location. And this is a long time ago, and she had a show upstairs, and there, and she's Asian American. And then she had a guy on the show who was murdering. I could hear from outside when I walked in, and I had to go after this guy. And then I walk in and he's doing the holding his eyes back Asian impression thing. Like, he's, but not just for, not ironically, not. And he's murdering. And I had the wrong idea where I go, this is awful. This is awful. If this is murdering, I'm going to kill because they're just idiots and they'll just laugh at anything. And I went up, and these were like years after I was doing this. I'm probably like 10 years in at this point. And I was like, oh, I got this. If this guy's getting laughs, they're just laughing at anything anybody says, because this is just awful. Not even because it's like, oh, because it's offensive, whatever. It's more like it's just not funny. Just, this isn't funny at all.
Right.
And I went up with the idea of like, I'm better than this show that's going on right now. And that was also a turning point, because I vowed never to think that again, because I didn't even get one pity laugh. Not even one sound came out of a mouth the entire time I was up there. And it was incredulous. It was almost like I kept digging myself a hole as I'm up there. It got worse and worse, and I was not bouncing back at all. Like, I was not, nothing was happening where I was like, oh, I know how to fix this. I think I was, you know what was happening? As I was bombing, I was getting mad that I was bombing because of, I watched the guy before me. And I was like, I can't believe this is happening. This guy was just doing a freaking Asian impression.
Right.
And I'm losing. I'm supposed to be closing this thing and I'm bombing left and right, you know?
You had everything working against you, because one, like, it was so bad that I guess the audience was just like dumb.
Yes.
And like, they literally just wanted like racist impressions. Yes. Like, it has to be like bad only to a point where I'm like, oh, I'm going to do fine. Like, they're still doing jokes with structure and stuff, but they're just not that funny. So I'm going to, but if they're just literally like, I'm Chinese, like, you know,
yeah.
I'm like, my joke about like, you know, whatever isn't going to interest them. Like, my nuanced view on something.
Yep.
And then at the same time, you're probably, you're like, what the fuck? Like, why is this not, why did that guy get all those laughs? And it's like doubling down on your just like shitty energy.
Absolutely. And then you're in your head already. So it's just that rookie move of just, you know, letting it get to you. And then they're reading it all over you. And they're just continuing. They're not being interested in what's going on.
Right. And are you missing performing right now? Do you miss it? Or are you kind of relieved?
Well, I'm doing a New Year's Eve show, which I'm lucky to have.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I was excited for that. It's at Soul Joel's in Pennsylvania.
Oh, they have like a really good, like heated tent situation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it should be. Okay. I'm hoping it's good. And then,
yeah.
But yes, and it's funny because before the quarantine and before they started doing outdoor shows during the summer, I went, that was like, you know, from March until what, May, maybe people started doing it, or June. So, and that was my longest time ever since I started not doing stand up. Like the longest before that was 9 days when I went on my honeymoon with my ex-wife. It was 9 days was me not doing stand up. And then, so I had the thought process that I was like, maybe I don't miss it. And maybe I am okay. And I'm going to go back up and not like it. And then I'm going to figure something else out to do. And I really had the thing because I was already like not that psyched on doing the road a ton. And I was like, whatever. And then sure enough, I went and I did an outdoor show at the diner in Astoria. And I did not do well. And I was like, oof, that was bad. And then I went to Soul Joel's for another time in the summer. And it was so much fun. And I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, once I kick the dust off, I love this. And I still want to do it. Like, I still love it. Like, I was really at the point where I was like, I think I might be done with this. And then once I did it a couple times, I was like, oh, yeah, over the summer. I was like, yeah, I love it. And I always wanted to at least do this, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you had this, but like when I kind of, it hit me that I wasn't going to maybe do stand up for like 4 months back when we thought this was going to be like a long 4 months.
Yeah.
I wept. Like I was so sad because stand up was like the thing for the last 5 years that's like kept me from being depressed and like given me a reason to like get out of my bed because I was so down on music and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd like just done the Tonight Show and I was like really jazzed to like do more shows yes. off of that.
Yeah.
And so I like grieved stand up. Like I was so, so upset. And then I kind of like I think
you,
I like went
through. You are so much more healthy emotionally than I am. You are. I think it's also, it might be because you're a woman. Women deal with their emotions better than men do. And we bottle shit up. But you were like, you properly grieve. Oh, I didn't.
I just have great parents.
I had great parents. It's not that. It's just how we dealt with shit. It was weird.
Yeah, yeah, you know? No. I was just throwing that out.
I know,
like, I was hoping you were going to jump on that and be like, yeah, my parents suck. That's why, or something. You're like, no.
I had loving parents. I still have one loving parent.
Yeah. But then I like kind of accepted it. And it wasn't that I was like, oh, I'll never do it again. But I kind of just like got into this mode where I was like fine without it because I had no choice but to be fine without it.
Right.
And then, yeah, I went and like did an outdoor show and I was like, holy shit, I miss this so much. Yeah. Like, but it, you know, it's when someone dies, you don't get to spend a day with them again, like 5 months later and be like, oh, right. I love this person.
Wouldn't that be great if somebody, and they can come back for like a day? Oh, you know how exciting that would be?
But you can only see them outside in a mask.
I take it.
Yeah,
it.
No.
I would definitely take it.
But would you though? Because then they have to, then they go away again, you know? Then you're just sad all over again.
But if you did, the only way it would be worthwhile is if you didn't know that was an option and then you found it out and you'd be so thankful for having that day, I think you'd be okay for a while.
Yeah, I guess
that's so
true.
Sad. We really got sad for a second. Yeah.
So like I've kind of like just, especially in the cold weather, I've just stopped doing like shows altogether now because I'm just like nervous. But
yeah, me too.
You're doing the New Year's Eve show. Are you doing like other shows?
No, that's the only downside. That's like, I'm hoping that I'm not like too rusty when I go back up for New Year's Eve, but I think it's going to be a good vibe and everything. No, I haven't done anything. Well, there's not much going on anyway. And like it shut back down again because of the weather.
Right.
And then it snowed that time. So no, besides this, I have nothing else lined up.
Are you finding that? Cause I only write when I like have the stage to like try stuff out on. Like it's like, I can't just, people who don't do stand up are like, well, can't you just like write a bunch of bits during this time? And you're no. Like, no, I have like some half premises, but yeah. Like, I can't. Are you someone who like writes out a lot before they go on stage, or do you like have an idea and then work it out at shows completely?
I have an idea and I work it out at shows. I have a thing that I jot on my phone and I go up and I talk about it. And then, and that's why I need shows. You're absolutely right, because I need shows where I can feel comfortable just bombing. Cause I had a couple in Brooklyn that I got a couple of bits out of because they were really, really receptive. There were great crowds and they kind of knew what was going on. And I tried like three new ideas there that I was like, oh, I just got like two lines out of this. But that's the only way. I need that instantaneous gratification of an audience saying, yeah, you're right with this one, and to learn how to say it in the future. So what I think is fine, I've tried I call it page to the stage. I always get jealous of people who are page to the stage, because I feel like there's some out there. I feel like Mulaney might be that one of those kind of people
who probably.
I think I only once watched Mulaney work something out where he wasn't having the greatest set, and I was like, wow, this is like watching a unicorn. I've never seen him struggle ever in my life, you know? But I think he must be a guy who just writes, and then goes up and already has the way he's going to say. I don't. I have to talk, and then tape it or pick out in my brain, this work.
Right.
Yeah.
I try to be paged to the stage. Like, I think I write out a bunch of stuff just for like security. Like, I'm used to like being quote prepared because of all like the music stuff. Yeah. But then when I get on stage, like none of that shit works. Yeah, so it's kind of just, it's like for me just to feel like I did something, but then it's all out the window.
But you did do something. See, I always feel that way where I'm like, I should still do the page part because you did do something, and it might, it might move you along faster just by even, because I'm sure there's premises that still get used that you've written down, you know?
Right. And I think sometimes like, I don't know if you do this like with just when you're like, okay, I need a new joke, like trying to like think of an idea, and like it never really, nothing really comes when you're trying to think. But the more I like sit and try to think of an idea, the more likely when I'm in the shower, something will come to me. Cause I've been like, it's like a delayed reaction almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like going to the gym, you're not going to immediately have abs, but like you do need to like go to the, I don't know.
That's why the Zoom things aren't bad. Like the Zoom meetups or the Zoom shows, because I treat them like just a place to just talk and then hopefully get something out of it.
Yeah.
And because that's how I'll say something and I'll go, oh, that actually could be something. I guess I'm maybe audibly I'm better than written, because like if I hear something, I'm like, oh, me saying it like that would make sense on stage saying it like that. So I should keep going with that idea. But then you wonder, there's so many times where even it shows like the Soul Jolt thing where it's like you're riffing, something works out really well, and you're like, oh, that's good. And then you try it again and it just fails every time.
Right. It's that like new energy too.
Yes.
Sometimes something only, it's really infuriating, but sometimes something only works because it's the first time you said it.
And, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And you never know exactly why, because it's not like you said it in any like special way, but the audience could just like tell.
That's absolutely, there's a weird, okay. So I think this is why, like, I'm not a religious person, but why I believe we're all connected, you can bring it into comedy, because there's a shared event that's going on with a group of people that are watching a comedy show where, now, I think that, don't get me wrong, I'm not a guy who's like, there's tons of shitty audiences. I think most audiences are gettable. And I think that, but I do think the idea of a shitty audience exists. I've seen it myself. I've seen really good comics go up and bomb one after another. And then it's like, okay, they're all professionals. It's you guys. Right. But it's not at a party where they all know each other and they decided in a huddle beforehand not to laugh. So what's happening is something's happening in that room. If there's an audience that's just awful, these people just telepathically or just vibe wise and just sixth sense wise made the decision, we're going to be a shitty audience. We've all, right. And that's why a lot of, like, you'll see it happen on the road. You've probably seen it with Friday Late Show, because people get out of work and they're out at like 5 PM. They go out drinking, they go out eating. And by the time they get to Friday Late Show, they're tired and they're just assholes and they're grumpy. And then you can bet on that one. That one you can almost bet on sometimes. But right. I honestly believe there's something that I think they have communicated with each other that, yeah, we're going to be, they don't ever say the words. They don't know each other. They don't speak to each other, but they decide just by like neurons, whatever you want to call it. They decide just by like, just by vibe and just by whatever electricity is coming off the bodies. Hey, it's a bad vibe in here and we're not going to laugh.
Yeah, I think that's so right. There is just like this sort of herd energy that happens. I think in the same way that like one guy laughing hysterically in an audience can make an audience good, because everyone's like, that guy's laughing, maybe I'll laugh. And it's like, it could simply just be like the absence of like a laugh catalyst. Like maybe there's just no one really laughing at first, and that just shuts down the night. You know, everyone's just like, well, I guess this show sucks.
Yep.
So,
well, I'll tell you, and the opposite can happen too, because I was hosting at the Village Underground one time, and there was one guy in the front row, and everybody else was pretty cool, but he was, but like they weren't, I wasn't doing well at all. Like this guy was getting to me. This guy was, he was a big guy. He was kind of imposing. He was right in the front and center. He had a white sweater on and he was bright, super bright. Everybody, I think, was focused on whatever this guy's reaction was, because I was trying to like bring this guy around, and I was doing the hosting thing. I'm like, come on, buddy, have a good time. It's fine. And he's just grilling me the entire time and going, you suck, that sucked. And he's just like, and he just being a shithead. And they were all catching this vibe. So I had a really rough set. And then the next comic went up, had a pretty rough set, did a little bit better. Next comic went up, had a rough set. This guy, right at the third comic goes up, he gets up to go to the bathroom. While he was in the bathroom, the crowd was amazing. The minute he got back, they went back to being tight. I swear to God.
That's really interesting. And that kind of goes with your whole like thing you were talking about in the beginning, like being the alpha male in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And like maybe a bad audience is just because there's like some really strong alpha presence.
Yes, I believe it.
That everyone is like unknowingly. That's really, really interesting.
We're all just animals at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We are.
Yeah.
Well, we're just animals. And Sean, it's been such a great time talking to you. Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. Oh, yeah.
It's so great to see you. You're one of my favorites. I love seeing you.
Oh, well, likewise, Sean. Oh, that makes me feel so nice.
Thank you for listening. For more, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter, both at @IsabelHagen_, and sign up for my mailing list at isabelhagen.com. And as always, please rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much, and take care.